Hello, I'm Stephen, the editor for Ventures in Ideology. The interview you're about to hear is a very vulnerable and intimate conversation with Candace, Karis, their mom Lynn, and brother John. I did want to make one note. They did leave a heater running during part of this conversation, and so there's a pretty loud hum, and it did affect the sound quality quite a bit. It's really good conversation, so I didn't want to cut it out. But if you are bothered by the audio, if you do skip ahead to 25 minutes, you'll find it will improve considerably because they turn it off. Anyway, I wish you well and hope you have a wonderful day. That's a weird thing to say. Okay. Enjoy the show.
My friend commented, kind of a world is it when you go in for gallbladder surgery and come out with cancer? Rude. It's a rude world.
So we are having a conversation with our mom about a recent cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is an opportunity for you to share your perspective kind of on your life and on the Christian response. Oh. I mean, I guess everyone's response to your cancer, but
especially the Christian.
Well, yeah. Actually, I've been very encouraged by, I would say, 99% of the responses I've had. They've been encouraging, they've been loving, they've been supportive, caring.
A lot of people love you.
That's funny. But thank you.
No, but it's true.
And I'm realizing it. I am realizing
it. Why is that funny?
Yeah, why is that funny, Mom?
Because I know who I am inside, and I think.
How are you
inside? But then you don't.
A beautiful, smart, hilarious, loving woman.
You're very sweet.
I mean, it sounds like maybe Lynn needs to love Lynn. Yeah, you did that for John.
But also, it's true.
It's, yes. Yeah, maybe you need to take your own advice.
I know. I do. It just always surprises me, I think, when I realize people care about me. Anyway, there have been some responses that have... one response was, okay, Lynn, look around you at... when you're in chemo, look around you and see who needs to hear a word from the Lord. Mm-hmm. You need to be basically evangelizing, and it just hit mm-hmm. me wrong. Like,
I think, not to make this about Adventures in Odyssey, but I feel like I need to talk a little bit about that because there was a recent cancer episode,
mm-hmm. yes,
that we decided not to mm-hmm. record because of all of this going on with you. It just felt like...
Too much
too close to home and very triggering.
Yeah.
But like my biggest takeaway from listening to that episode of Adventures in Odyssey was like, look at this woman with cancer. I guess young woman, this child, I guess, uh-huh. really, this female child with cancer. How great is her witness for uh-huh. God? Uh-huh. You know, like, isn't she suffering beautifully uh-huh. for the Lord? And I feel like that's a very similar thing that response to you is. It kind of embodies. And it's gross.
And it's
dehumanizing.
Yeah.
Well, I also feel like with the environment that you grew up in and that uh-huh. we grew up in, uh-huh. it was very much, nothing is about you. You weren't allowed to make anything
True.
About you.
Yeah.
And this is just a continuation uh-huh. of that, mm-hmm. where it's like, even in your own sickness, and your own life struggles, it can't be about you. Uh-huh. It has to be about saving uh-huh. the lost or whatever bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just, it just doubles down on the, uh-huh. on like this belief that like you don't matter as a person, uh-huh. which is complete bullshit.
Uh-huh.
And also like the idea of God being so abusive, like God gave you cancer so that you can be here to minister to these people uh-huh. for him.
Yeah, I think along those lines, it also reminds me a little bit of, like, the fundamental job of being a Christian is to, like, convert people. Mm-hmm. It's just this very busybody mm-hmm. thing that, like, once you're a Christian, your job is to make more Christians. And there's no, like, time to reflect on that at all. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah. You don't really sit with yourself. You don't think about what's true or what is maybe wrong with things. You're just like, you need to go out and work. And that's what you need to keep doing, Mom. You need to keep working. And then you'll die. And then you'll go to heaven. And then you'll be fine.
And then I'll have jewels in my crown.
That's right.
But think of the testimony you'll leave. Mm-hmm. Which is just so gross.
Really want. Anyway. And also, my way of, air quotes, evangelizing is to be kind and friendly to all those that are around me. Like when I'm in the hospital, the nurses are amazing. They're all so kind. And so after I got this little kind of sermon about what I needed to do, I was talking with one of the nurses, and we just talked about what she was doing for Thanksgiving. And her daughter really liked, she said, yeah, my daughter would just eat mashed potatoes and gravy. I'm like, I'm with her.
And then did you invite her to church?
No, but they did pray the sinner's prayer. Okay,
you got one down.
Okay. But I feel like I'm there, that part of me is Jesus coming out. And then someone else will come along who also has Jesus coming out, you know? And that it's not my job to have them pray the sinner's prayer. That's not my job.
That shouldn't be a job.
I don't think that Jesus gave that job to anybody.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure the sinner's prayer is heretical. Yes. Well, and also, along that same line, so when we go and we meet the doctor on Fridays, last Friday, when we met with her, because you're now kind of starting to be more normal with all of your stuff, you're being shifted to like a different doctor, a different daycare or whatever. Daytime care, not daycare.
The doctor for the babies.
I heard it.
So did I.
You know what I mean.
And I understood exactly what
you mean. See, Mom loves me. And she was like really sad about that because she didn't want to give you up
because
you're her favorite.
That was so sweet.
She said you were her favorite.
Yeah, because they joke back and forth so much about stuff.
People just love you. Just get into people's hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've had a really good relationship.
Yeah.
And she one time came in. Well, you're turning out to be quite the little
troublemaker.
Troublemaker, aren't you?
Yeah.
And. Anyway,
she's like, not that I'm giving you up, but I don't want to give you up, like the way that she worded it.
Yeah, it was very sweet.
Yeah, it was very sweet. She likes laughing with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't much of a laughing kind of place, I don't think.
No. The cancer center.
Yeah.
It's a lot of.
I think there's a lot of sadness there.
Sharing a lot of bad news. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people are grieving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For their life that they wanted or, you know, their expectations. Yeah.
I'm sad about that for me. But I have two, I'm holding my life in two hands. I have two dual paths. One, I am expecting to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
That on November 22nd, I go for a CT scan. I'm expecting good news.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I'm preparing to not be here. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, but I need to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
You're Schrodinger's cat right now.
That's right. I'm both alive and dead.
And yeah, I feel like we're holding that too. Like,
yeah, I think
we don't know.
Of course.
We don't know how your lifestyle changes in doing chemotherapy and how this is affecting the cancer, if it's having any impact.
Yeah.
We're just kind of moving forward a day at a time.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like I've been in evangelicalism basically my whole life, charismatic movement, Pentecostal, whatever you want to call it, Christian. Fundamental. And a few years ago, I said to my husband, I really don't want to have to work anymore. And his response was, well, welcome to the real world. And at that point, I felt like I had no recourse. And I started to just push things down. Where do you go? Who do you talk to? And your husband's a pastor.
It's also important to say, like, at that point, you had raised 4 children.
Mm-hmm. Single-handedly.
You did all the work for raising the kids with very little money. Mm-hmm. And you were working multiple jobs.
Yeah.
Like, you were more than double shifting. You were, like, triple shifting.
Yeah. Cooking and cleaning and laundry.
And you were...
Volunteering at the schools, too.
Volunteering at schools and doing everything that I needed to do.
At that point, like, he had a good job. Mm-hmm. Right? You were financially stable. Mm. You were tired and you needed a rest. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no.
Yeah.
That is not... You don't deserve a rest, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
When compared to you, his whole life has been rest.
Yeah.
It's not an exaggeration.
Compared to most of us.
Like, that's such a slap in the face. Mm-hmm. You have literally been, like, giving your life force to make things work. And he hadn't been.
I really thought we were a team.
Yeah.
And that I had given and given and given to support him through his... schooling and through the tough times and everything, and then when it's like, okay, now I can take a break, maybe.
Yeah.
There was no seeing on his part, and that was really, really hard. And so then you start to push things down. Now,
do you think, like, before that, you hadn't already been pushing things down?
Not at all.
When did that conversation take place?
About 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh.
But you discovered journals from like 20 years ago where you were already voicing discontent and saying, I don't want to be married anymore. Mm-hmm. I hate my life. Mm-hmm. So that...
Well, oh, totally. Pushed things down because I asked... my husband to go for counseling, and he wouldn't. He wouldn't find a counselor. He wouldn't. He said, no, I know too many people in our city.
He was worried.
He was worried anything would
get out.
About
his own pride.
His own reputation and image and all that. And I asked a number of times, and then you just give up because it's not going to happen. So then when I moved here, and then I needed a separation, and that shocked him, and he found a counselor. It was amazing how you can find a counselor when you need to. So, but that hasn't panned out.
Well, he found a counselor, and then that counselor
really could really see both sides, because he had worked a lot with theologians, and he said they live in their heads, and that's what my husband is a theologian, and he lives in his head, and he said, well, I can work with that. And so then my husband decided not to continue with him.
He was too insightful.
Found someone else. Yeah, he
didn't like it. Yeah.
He was too insightful. So.
Well, and even still, you guys are separated.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't tell anyone that you're separated to protect his own reputation again.
But he is telling everyone about your cancer and takes every opportunity to ask me about you so that he has information he can tell people if he sees them.
So that
he is taking people's requests of, oh, give her a hug from me.
Yeah.
Like, that is something that he's able to do. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, yeah, I will. Like, you know, it is really misrepresenting things and shaping the narrative to be what he wants it to be.
But he also did tell people you guys were in counseling, did he not?
Yes, but you know why? What he's told them it was for? Our adult children's life choices.
That's you too.
That's you too.
Yeah. I didn't marry an atheist.
Oh, true.
Yeah, but she at least got married.
She got married.
I'm just looking.
And then had children.
He is an atheist now. He was not he was on the path to atheism, but when we got married, he was not fully there yet.
And Dad didn't know that.
True. I don't know if he knows it now, even though it has been told to him.
That's why he said we were going
through. I'm sorry that we've caused you such trouble in your marriage.
Yeah. You have not caused me any trouble.
Although I feel like you coming out and you moving in with your boyfriend were both kind of catalyzing things for you. The disruption of
totally.
Your relationship.
Because I didn't, you know, and we've talked about this, Jonathan said, well, because I'm with him, and he said, well, why didn't you speak up more when he met with Dad and I?
It was a really bad conversation.
It was, and I mostly stayed out of it, and I shouldn't have. I should have said something, but I didn't. But I was, because it was a non-issue by then to me. It was a huge issue to Dad.
Do you think some of it, too, was like a trauma response from dealing with Dad's anger?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I just couldn't.
You just kind of shrink away from it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I did. A lot. Because I don't know if I told you guys this. And if I have, well, suck it up and listen again.
Remember, it's the first thing to go when you get old.
And then what?
But at least you're still pretty.
Not even pretty. Years ago, the biggest fear I had was having a gay child. That was like the biggest, biggest thing in Christianity at the time. And I remember the Lord saying, okay, Lynn, so what if you do have a gay child? It's like, oh yeah, what if I do? Well, I would still love them and they would still be part of my family. And so it was like I was prepared, you know, let that horrible, monstrous thing wasn't as horrible and monstrous as I thought it was going to be. I could deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then when it actually happened, I had already, mm-hmm. I was prepared. So for me, even by then, it was a non-issue. Or not a non-issue, but it wasn't a big deal like it was for Dad.
Do you think that God does that with everybody? Prompt them about.
I think he does. Things he like tries
like,
to.
Like, do you think that he also prompted Dad? Of
but
like,
I think Dad would.
And Dad's reaction was triggering an anger, right?
Yeah, that's not ever going to happen. That's
but
just
I just think of that and like how like God gave you both opportunities to learn to process this thing that is really not a thing. And you chose it. Mm-hmm. I mean that in a good way. Sorry. I don't know if that I'm sorry. I feel like everything I say is wrong today. But you chose to listen to it. And like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, my perspective is changing. I'm mm-hmm. growing. I'm learning. Mm-hmm. I'm shifting. I'm redirecting. And Dad just like doubled down and doubled down. It's like the difference between like the Pharaoh and Moses, like mm-hmm. how it's like God hardened his heart eventually because mm-hmm. he hardened his own heart. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just an interesting
thought. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe this came up in your counseling, but it seems like Dad has kind of like decided what he believes when he was like in his teens
he
or whatever.
He told me, he was sitting here in this living room.
Oh, right, he was very proud of this, right?
And said, I haven't changed what I believe since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And he was very proud of it, and that kind of scared me.
He was offended that you have
that
changed.
I have changed. Like, don't you believe anything you?
And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I remember growing up, that seemed like the thing to do. Like, you know, it's true as a teenager, you stick with that for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But like living as a human being, that's ridiculous. That's just so ridiculous. And what did I know as a teenager?
Exactly.
I know. That's the thing.
But the church uses it as this fear thing of like, oh, as soon as you go to college, you're going to be filled with all sorts of horrible mm-hmm. things. And, like, so you need to know what you believe now. Like, it becomes mm-hmm. this, like, really toxic thing. Instead of, like, going out into the world and being like, oh, that's really good. I never knew that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to change my perspective on mm-hmm. that. I'm changing my beliefs. I'm shifting. I'm mm-hmm. learning more. I'm mm-hmm. becoming more well-rounded and more open mm-hmm. to the world. And, like, you know.
Loving, more compassionate,
more
insightful, more
understanding.
Wiser. Yeah, like all those things.
It's, I mean, I feel like the ideology piece is that they talk a lot about loving people, mm-hmm. but what their prescriptive way of like quote unquote loving people is so hateful.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed
there's no room for people's humanity. Like, you can't...
Mm-hmm.
You're not mm-hmm. allowed to embrace a person as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You're only allowed to embrace them as, like, a Christian in a very, like, in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... It, to me, it seems completely counter to the understanding of Jesus that I had as a child,
mm-hmm.
who was about, like, relationship and humanity and, you know,
yeah.
like... building connections.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Even in, like, the, well, you should be evangelizing to people while you're going
mm-hmm.
through cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not love to anyone around you or to you. Like,
mm-hmm. exactly.
Oh, you're about
awesome.
To die?
Yeah.
Do you know Jesus?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, opportunistic. And
for me, it's more important to connect with them and make them laugh. Like, to have a positive exchange.
Yeah. A relationship in which you treat them like a human
yeah.
being and
yeah.
not a commodity to help you look
that
better when you get to heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trick is to make them think you're treating them as a human being
yeah.
and then convert them.
But that's what they say
know,
in all in
I
like
know,
Christians.
I know.
We like actually teach them. Almost like word for word.
No.
I should have brought my evangelism notebook. We're going to talk about that another time.
Oh, we will.
Yeah.
As always, maybe you guys know this passage, but it's one that always stuck with me, even though I hardly remember it. So maybe you can help me out. I think it was Paul. He was saying something about trying to convert people, like, to the so-and-so, I became
yeah.
like so-and-so.
Yeah.
Do you know that
be
passage?
All things
yeah.
to all people. I am all things to all people.
Yeah, something like
yeah.
that.
Greeks that became
so if they're grieving, grieve.
Right.
With them. If they're happy, be happy with them.
It's also very manipulative.
Well, you know, I actually really like that passage.
Oh.
Minus the manipulative part.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually, if you're genuinely
yeah.
doing that, then you can't,
if you're
you can't also be manipulative,
yeah.
you can't be
yeah.
trying to convert them, because if you're open-minded, you're learning, you're growing, you're like, oh, that's, you know.
And you're hearing
yeah.
their story.
Yeah.
And
it's not like, oh, you're sad? Here's Jesus.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah. I feel sad that you don't know Jesus. I'm sad with you.
Sad
for you.
And for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I really like that passage, except for kind of like his takeaway from it. And I was like, it seems very disingenuous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how can that even exist if that's what you're
But
if
that's what we're supposed
that.
To be doing.
It's
phony. Like,
it's,
that wasn't Jesus, though.
I think it's hard to know what the takeaway actually was, given that the translations we have, you know, like, they've all been translated with an agenda
yeah.
and a way of that people already believed and understood it to be, you know? So I think there's a good chance that it is, like, connect with people...
At where they're at.
Yeah. And don't push
Paul
an agenda on
something
them.
Like that? I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
A lot can be lost in translation.
Yeah, that's true.
Or intentionally changed in translation.
Yeah, yeah. And has been.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Should I turn off the heater? Sorry, I'm just thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's noisy.
I just thought of it.
I just...
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. That sounds really difficult. And I know, like, I've started seeing someone who is just so supportive
mm-hmm.
and encouraging
mm-hmm.
and, like, very safe space. And it's, like... It's a really wonderful thing
it's
to be
really
around.
Growth
and it, yeah.
oriented.
Yeah,
incident.
It is. It's a very
yeah.
warm experience, and it's really amazing. And then
yeah.
to hear that your marriage has not really at all been like that, it's really, yeah. really awful.
It's the lot of a lot of women in the church.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most,
yeah.
I would
the
especially from your generation.
The acupuncturists told me yesterday that breast cancer. There's a guy in Taiwan who teaches him, and he says breast cancer is often because of stress in relationships.
Hmm.
And when you look around at how many women we know who've had breast cancer, it's...
In the church,
yeah. Hmm. It's... Well, I only mostly know people in the church, and there's a lot. Because women take the brunt of relationships.
But you don't have breast cancer.
But I don't have breast cancer.
Yeah.
Which is
amazing. Yeah. I would have thought I would.
So your relationship kind of been that
bad. I don't think I realized it wasn't that good for quite a number of years.
No, I think if that's normalized, that's what everyone's taught and everyone believes, of course.
Well, you just obey your husband, right?
Yeah.
I'll
also say it's not really good for the husbands either.
No,
it's like bad for everybody all around.
They can become egomaniacs.
And I think it's
and narcissists.
The fallout tends to be
more
obvious and worse for women. But, but men, like, that's not a way to live either.
No,
Dad's not happy.
No.
I remember when I was doing my first year of college and I was taking English and I brought home that feminist short story.
Was that the window one?
The window, yeah.
Did you remember that in high school also?
It's
like 2 pages?
Yeah, it's very short.
That. Yeah, I know.
The
it's
one
I remember
where...
About the woman.
Her husband dies.
He dies and then he walks in the house?
Yeah, and she's like, I'm free. And then he walks in the house and then she dies.
And the doctor says...
That resounded. Oh, she was so happy
She died from like joy
husband.
Or
joy.
Something. Like, seeing her husband again. It's like,
and it resounded with me, that story.
That was
a long time ago. That was at least.
Well, it's the concept of the frog in boiling water, right? If you put a frog...
Boil a frog alive.
If you put it in boiling water, it'll jump out. Mm-hmm. If you put it in lukewarm water and turn up the heat, it will stay in there and boil alive. And that was kind of your situation, right? It's like... You think that it's good, it's okay, and then it just, like, gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse.
You think,
but you don't have anything to compare it to anymore.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, I need to get out of the pot now, and you're told, you have to stay in there.
Yeah.
And boil to death.
Yeah.
And actually, like, he's gotten you a few gifts since the diagnosis, and since you told him that you didn't want him to be involved in the treatment or in anything.
Because he has a gift of making it all about him.
Oh, and
goodness.
Making it very
it's
difficult.
Amazing.
Well, you told him that he makes things all about him. And he was like, have I done that? And you weren't able to, in the moment, remember that he had. Because we had the meeting with the surgeon to talk about the if we could get the cancer removed. And he was texting you while we were in that meeting and, like, wanting information. And then after that, he was texting you. And you weren't ready to talk to him about it. You were processing. And you texted your children. And meanwhile, he phoned your oldest child. And was like, I'm coming to Edmonton. I really need to be there for your mom right now. And then he just started driving up. And we went over to see them so you could tell them about the meeting in person. And he phoned you while we were there. And not once did he ask what you want. It was just what he wants. He wanted to see you. He wanted to know what happened. And then he basically invited himself over for dinner. And after that, I was putting the kids to bed. Karis was here.
Karis stayed and played interference for me.
He did. But okay, he got there. He came in the door. And he was crying. And he was just, he told me about how hard this was on him. And I just said, this is hard on all of us. But it's not about us. Right? Like, obviously, it's an opportunity for us to be there for you. And not make this about how hard it is on all of us. And then later that night, he cornered you. And was talking about how hard it was on him. How him...
I can totally see this happening, by the way. I know exactly how Dad talks like this.
Yeah.
Like,
he was like...
That's very familiar.
I'm so used to it. I don't hardly notice it, but...
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. He's like, I'm heartbroken for you. I'm heartbroken for the kids. I'm heartbroken for... And it was all about him. Yeah.
He really does love to talk about how much he hurts, his feelings hurt about things.
Yeah.
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 But he doesn't think about or recognize it's not valid when other people have feelings about things.
So, and that had just happened, and it took all of your strength to say, I don't want you to be a part of this. So you didn't have anything to respond. And I didn't feel like it was my place at that point as a child, as one of the children to say that. But he already had. Everything that he's done in this whole situation has been about him. Okay. He came one time, we were talking, and he said, let me know when she loses her hair so I can shave my head.
Yeah.
In solid. So he can make a public display of how much he's supporting you and how difficult this is for him. And it's all very image management.
Yeah.
You know, and
it seems very performative in the way that, like, you kind of do these things, but really there's no, like, substantive change.
Yeah.
Or, like,
he wants
action behind
he it. He wants me to be healed and our marriage to be healed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know,
that sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
That's the message he's telling people.
Yeah.
But you also know that he believes that the reason you have cancer is because you left him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Did he say that?
No, but
that's the thought pattern of kind of his family.
Because you got an email from grandma that basically said that. Like, his mom. That basically said, like,
what?
I need to forgive Marvin.
Your dad's dad.
Yeah.
Because he was a horrible person. I have forgiven him, and I don't really think about him except that your dad became him again. Yeah. Like, he started to become like him.
Yeah.
Very gruff and very...
Yeah.
Uncaring and totally self-absorbed, and
and you told him that, and he told his mother that, and she was offended and emailed you about it.
Yeah.
A very healthy pattern, triangulate.
How did Dad respond when you told him that?
I don't think I told him. Didn't you?
No, I thought you did.
Did I?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
This is all news to me. I don't know.
Yeah, you
I didn't answer. Her back. What did he say then? I don't remember.
I think he was really offended.
Yeah.
And I think he probably talked about how much better he was than his dad.
Oh, that part. I didn't tell him about his mom telling
him. No.
Yeah, what did he say about
that? Totally. When I said, you're becoming like your dad. Well, first of all, I'm putting that on him, that I need to forgive his dad. But also, I'm way better than my dad. I've really tried to do way better than my dad, and it's like a very low bar to be better than his dad.
Yeah.
So it's not that much higher of a bar.
Yeah.
Because still, he doesn't hear me. I don't have a voice. Uh-huh. Doris didn't have a voice in their relationship, so I don't have a voice either, and it's the same.
But Dad also told you that it would be easier on him if you were dead.
Yes.
Yes, than leaving him.
Than leaving him. It would be easier for him.
In what context did he say that?
We were having coffee.
Yeah.
And I was trapped in his van.
Oh, yeah.
God.
And I wanted to take my car, and it didn't work out, so we took his van, just went up to McDonald's, got an iced coffee, and he said it would be way easier for me, this whole situation, if you were dead rather than leaving me. So now he's going to get his wish.
So melodramatic. Oh, so maybe he manifested.
And then it was a week later that you had your gallbladder attack.
Yeah. And may I just say, we had a counseling appointment in the morning where he said to the counselor and to me, I want to be her hero. I want to be her hero. And
that is really, so melodramatic. Oh my God.
I don't want a hero. I want a teammate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like, kind of for me, whatever that means. Then that afternoon, I got a really bad gallbladder attack that I thought I was having a heart attack. And
So I laid on the couch at Ben and Joanna's and my son and daughter-in-law's house. Oh. And
I think I know where this story is going.
And he was on the chair right beside it, and slowly, as I was in more and more pain, he slowly moved then to the piano bench, then to the table, and then to, like, as far away from me in the room as he possibly could. And I don't know what to do. What should I do? What should I do? Joanna came in. My daughter-in-law came in and said, should we call an ambulance? What's going on? Shall we call an ambulance? And I'm like, oh, maybe I can do it. And I sat up. No, I can't. Call an ambulance. I thought I could make it. But that was a godsend, too. Because, and Joanna just took over, called.
She was your hero.
She was my hero. And the thing is, if you get taken to the hospital in an ambulance, they can't let you go till they find a bed for you.
Oh.
Like, you have to stay. So I ended up sleeping in the hallway. I mean, because they couldn't find a bed. And finally they found a bed. Then Candace came that night and brought me
a bunch of stuff
because I had nothing. Yeah.
Toothbrush.
Yeah. Yeah. Meds. But they gave me my meds when I was there. Oh, so that was good. But I just thought, this is so interesting when he's just said, I want to be your hero. And then he's, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. It's like, just think.
Yeah.
So that kind
maybe
of.
Don't run away.
That kind, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of ended it for me.
It also really highlights how different the way he thinks about the world is from the reality around him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if that was not the chance to be a hero, then what is?
So it's just all you know? Words.
Yeah.
Yeah, there isn't actually there's no connection between his head and his heart and his mouth.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
Fascinating. It's just so weird. I don't get it.
Yeah.
So I did tell the counselor that.
And what did the counselor say?
That was our last time together.
Yeah.
That one was our last time together. And then, at one point she said to me that I have, what is it?
I keep forgetting. Fatigue.
Pursuer's fatigue. That I have been trying and trying and trying to get his attention. And nothing, 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 nothing. And so then you give up. And then he notices that there's a problem, but by then it was too late for me. I was done. Because I'd been trying for like 20 years.
And now he's been very, very publicly performative about how much he loves you, and he's been posting stuff on his Facebook, and I've had people that I haven't talked to in years reach out to me. And when I tell them that you're separated, they're shocked because they got the information from Dad's Facebook, and he makes it seem like you're together, and he was posting things about like son's day and daughter's day, and like your mom and I love you, like.
And it's true.
I know it's true.
We do love you.
But technically, like, technically not a lie, but a misrepresentation of how things are.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, he's only started doing this since you've been separated.
Yeah, that's true.
Making such a big public showing of me and your mom, me and Lynn, you know. And that feels yucky.
Yeah.
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 Well, and other family members have been seeing it too, and been really angry about it.
Yeah.
Like, extended family.
Yeah.
Like, what?
What the?
What is this?
What the what?
Yeah.
What
is that? What the what?
What the what?
Yeah.
Is that what Ashia says?
And then he's been sending you gifts. He sent you a mug.
Yes, and a
that
book.
That said love.
Yeah. And I just couldn't.
You don't
want to
drink out of his love. Like,
no, I just.
That's what he said.
Well, but I mean, that's partly though, like, what men are taught is, like, if they make a mistake, they make up for it by, like, buying gifts and doing public displays of things. Which there needs to be a much better narrative around that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
and if they listen to the person they purport to love, then they would learn how to love them the way, you know?
They need to be loved.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then a book. The last thing you got was a book that was written by a man whose wife died of cancer to help people going through cancer. And it felt so gross. Like, it just felt like a cursed object. Mm-hmm. It did.
Horcruxes.
We called it a horcrux, yeah. We called them two horcruxes, and we destroyed them one night.
Smashed them and burned them.
We did. We did, yeah. I have it on video.
Did you see it? You have it on video. Demons flying away.
But there was a level of catharsis.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that book felt like wishful thinking, you know? Like, yeah. This is so relatable. This is going to be my life. Look, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
Oh, like he's my gonna, wife's he's death is going
to propel me to success.
Right, yeah.
And so I want my side out there. So when he talks about...
Why don't you write a book?
Karis is going to write a book from my journal.
Yeah. I'm also working on my memoirs.
Yes.
So
yes.
I
so you can incorporate
this
all this.
About, yeah. Well, giving you a couple chapters.
Okay.
If you want. Okay. To share some of your story.
Yeah.
You're more than welcome to. But it does feel, like, predictive of, like, if you die, uh-huh. Dad is going to use it. Uh-huh. To propel him to success, like you said.
It seems like he's hoping for that. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he thinks he's hoping for that, mm-hmm. but he, like he said, it would be easier for him yeah. if you were dead. And that mm-hmm. didn't come from nowhere. Mm-hmm. That comment didn't mm-hmm. come from nowhere.
Yeah.
And especially if you die without divorcing him, then he can make up whatever story mm-hmm. he wants to tell people. Mm-hmm. You know.
I think either way, he'll make up whatever story.
Yeah. True.
And I think, like, I really think Dad sees himself as a Job character.
He does. And that's the
yeah, he's
amazing
a
thing to me. Yeah.
He sees himself as a victim.
But also, like, stay true to God and everything will work out eventually. Mm-hmm. Whatever that means. Whatever
kind of God you believe. New wife, a new kid?
Like, maybe three of each? Like Job did.
Marry a young wife.
We have plans for him.
But yeah, you know, like, all his children have gone astray, mm-hmm. his life is going down the toilet, but, like, keep steady in that faith you developed when you were 14 years old, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. things will work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't put any work into relationships around you, only pour all your work into God and the ministry. Because yeah. I don't feel like you can have a connection with a loving God and be in the place where he is at. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like he has so just internalized his own voice as hearing mm-hmm. from God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all just like a big loop in there. Mm-hmm. He asks God for guidance. He tells himself that he's hearing from God, from himself. And
yeah, here's the guidance.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's not open to hearing, well... Wasn't open to hearing from me, mm-hmm. but then I'm a heathen. He told me once I needed to get saved.
How, when was that?
Oh, lots of years ago. Yeah. Long time ago.
Do you feel like you're saved?
Whatever that means, I don't know. I feel like I have a relationship with Jesus.
Do we need to go through the sinner's prayer? Because we can do that right here. All of us together.
So that no one's embarrassed. If everyone says it, yes. No one's singled out.
We're doing this for me, not for you.
That's right.
Wink, wink.
We are actually doing it for John. This is an elaborate
I feel so betrayed.
The intervention banner scrolls open.
Have cancer? God.
I sometimes wonder.
That one hurts only because it's something I could see evangelicals really doing. Like they get so into their manipulations.
Yeah. It's the bait and switch.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it kind of is. So I feel like I stuffed a lot of stuff. And someone said that your gallbladder holds anger. Mm-hmm. And when they couldn't take it out with three or five little incisions they had. I've got an 8-inch scar on my mm-hmm. stomach under mm-hmm. my rib cage. And it was very angry. Mm-hmm. They said it was a very angry gallbladder. And at the bottom was one big ball. Like there were lots of little ones, and then it had become one big ball kind of thing. And had become cancerous and gone to my liver, so.
You also told me once that for years you wished to die.
Yeah. To just not be in my life. Mm-hmm. Except, you know what? I think about the kids. Mm-hmm. Think, but I don't want to leave my children.
What,
I don't.
What period was that? How old were yours?
It was a niggling thing from the time I think we were in Cairnport.
Yeah.
That was 93.
Yeah. It was not initially, but when Dad started pastoring, mm-hmm. then he and I have a very different idea of what it means. And that was just hard to mm-hmm. be. And that's
kind of complicit in a system that they didn't agree with.
Because there were a lot of things that I questioned. Like, why do we have to go to church when, especially not so much in Cairnport, but when we were at the college, I would get everybody ready on Sunday morning and go to church and either have to sit with a wiggly child and make sure they sat still. Like, you don't get anything out of the service. Or you're in nursery with them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why am I even here? What is the point? Why do we do this to ourselves? You know?
I don't know.
I don't mm-hmm. either.
Yeah.
And I remember one time I'd given you a bath, Candace, in the morning. And you had washed your hair and I put your head back to rinse it, and then you put your head forward, and then you got water in your mouth. You were just little, maybe a year and a half. And you thought I was trying to drown you, and you were crying, and I'm cuddling you, and I'm trying to get everybody ready for, well, I guess just Ben by then, but trying to get church and all that.
If I was a year and a half, then you were either very pregnant or had another baby.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Close to having another baby. So you
were the sunshine in her life.
The sunshine in all of our lives.
Thanks.
See, even in your beard. Sunshine.
Oh, that was such an unexpected nice thing.
So I remember I brought you to church. Everything seemed fine, but you would not settle down in nursery. And they finally came and got me. And I took you home, and we just rocked and rocked and rocked. And I cuddled you and cuddled you. It was awesome. I've always remembered that because I made that choice to not do what everybody thinks you should do. But I did the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't always do the right thing.
But you chose your family over church.
Always. Well, as much as I possibly could. Because growing up in a pastor's home, I didn't feel I was ever chosen. So that was important for me once Paul was pastoring. Okay, but it's family first.
And it was for you.
It was always for me. If there was a church thing or something you guys are doing, the decision is made for me. I don't care about church stuff. They're not that important. But there wasn't usually an overlap, you know. Yeah, I tried, really tried to make you guys feel important.
I think the proof is in the pudding. Yeah. Like, you have relationships with three people. That you have a relationship
with all four. Yeah.
Yeah. Three are here now in front of you. Mm-hmm. having this conversation.
Yeah.
And two of the people here Dad does not initiate contact with ever.
Does he with you?
No.
No?
No, he emails me if I have mail.
Oh, okay. Oh.
So.
He brings my mail here, and then I'm the delivery person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he. But I mean, like, Dad never initiated contact with me. Before, ever. Really. So yeah. I don't feel like anything's really changed that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it has for you.
I don't think,
I mean, to be clear, we're more of the black sheep of the family.
You guys are?
We're more scandalous. Is that?
I guess.
Yeah. Is that, okay.
I mean, I have children.
Yeah.
So.
On the surface, you're looking like you're doing it at least.
But also that is the nature of it, every contact. Can I come
visit see the grandkids? Yeah, right.
And I'm also never sure if it's about seeing the grandkids or like potentially seeing grandma. Getting an opportunity to corner grandma. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah. So I've gone back and forth between being like, do I just shut it down? I don't know. But I also, yeah.
But so then it sounds like. Sorry, we can get back to you. But it sounds like. Dad reaches out to you more now that you have kids.
Now that I have kids and now that Mom has made very clear that grandchildren are her top priority. Mm. And after prioritizing that for years, and especially now that they're separated, you know, it looks very good for him to come and see the grandchildren. So I have a hard time knowing if he comes because he really wants to see the grandchildren or if he comes to look like he really cares about the grandchildren. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But
either way, the kids love him.
I'm just saying, I don't feel like his like contact has really changed much.
Right. Oh, totally. Yeah.
Because he never initiated things anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the case?
That's the case for me as well. I initiated things a lot with him, especially when I was out at college. Out at his college, I was intentional to like have a games night with him once a week and like all sorts of things, and it was all on me all the time. Yeah, and you know, he never tried. Even when I tried to like have conversations with him about our upbringing or about things like that, the response was, you know, him. Pretending to be sort of sympathetic, but not really. Also being like, well, give me an example. Yeah. And then...
That is his tactic. Mm-hmm.
Him going and telling Mom, well, you know, Karis, she just cries. Mm-hmm.
She's emotional.
Yeah. So, which means nothing that I say...
The pot calling the kettle
black. Literally. But also undermining it. Like, as I'm emotional, which means that nothing I say has any validity. Yeah. But when he's emotional, it's valid.
It's extra valid. So,
you know,
that's like emphasis on how valid it is.
Yeah.
But it is actually usually when he's emotional, it's very manipulative.
Yes.
And that also makes me think then that he, on some level, is aware of that. If he's discounting your emotional display.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He thinks I'm just being manipulative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if he was, you know, if it wasn't manipulative, if it was genuine, then you would feel empathy with someone else.
Yeah.
What? Oh, I was just going to say.
An old lady wants to speak.
Oh. I might die before I get my chance.
Gather around.
You guys keep gabbing.
Does she ever stop talking?
No, I was going to say, though.
So anyway.
So Paul and I had a conversation, and I told him something like, this is what happens, or this is how you respond, or something. Well, give me an example. If I give him an example, then he says, well, what about forgiveness? And it's like, you can't win. You know, where does forgiveness come in? When I was finally, I wrote down a bunch of stuff and said, okay, this and this and this and this and this, and because, and honestly, I had forgiveness. I really, this sounds really weird, but I prayed and asked the Lord, please bring something to my mind so that I can show him this is valid. And then I got a lot of stuff, and then other people helped me, reminded me of things, and yet it's, well, what about forgiveness? What about forgiveness? Mm-hmm. And moving on kind of thing. It's like, and I get that. It's valid. But you asked for...
Yeah, that's not what we're talking about right now.
Yeah. And so...
And also, like,
in order for you to continue in relationship, there's no trust if he doesn't change, you know, like hear and make an effort to stop being abusive, really. You were trying to call attention to some kind of abusive and manipulative and really dangerous, toxic things, and he was gaslighting you. And that's what he learned that from his dad.
Yep.
And it's
the church.
Yeah, and the church. And it's so ingrained.
All the teaching.
And anytime someone, like, teaching, tries to highlight it or question or, like, show him that, he gets so defensive. Because it's so... There's a lot of...
So deep, I think. That
shame.
Shame and trauma. And
yeah.
It's a wound.
Yeah.
But... It's not your responsibility to...
I realize that he hasn't... I mean, I didn't even realize it till we were at with the second counselor, that he is still dealing with things that he was dealing with when we were first married. Mm-hmm. I'm like, whoa. I had no idea that you were still way back there and dealing with all your own insecurities. Because... let's face it, everybody's insecure, but you gotta get over it.
Usually, I feel like by the time you're 30, you learn, like, oh, everyone's insecure, and no, none of our stuff is that bad.
Yeah,
so we can all just
be
okay with ourselves. Really care.
Nobody cares. Yeah, exactly.
When you're a teenager, apparently, someone told me this once that.
Sorry, I should say I don't know if that trajectory is true in the church, but we can come back to that.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, I was just gonna say that when you're a teenager, apparently. Generally, they feel like as soon as they step outside the house, every eye in the world is on them, and they're thinking, that's how your dad still lives.
Yeah.
That's
I've come to the place where nobody cares, Lynn. Like, really, nobody cares.
Why I'm dying and people remember who I am.
It surprises me when people are so coming, you know, because you just feel like you're under the radar. I mean, really.
I mean, nobody cares if your hair looks weird because they're all worried about their hair looking weird. But people remember when you're kind to them.
Yes. And that's it. Yeah. Kindness.
Yeah.
So what were you going to say? No, you?
I have something to say, but I don't think it was related. Or I don't... It wasn't something... It was something that I just thought of.
Knock, knock.
No. Who's there?
Boo.
Boo-hoo.
Why are you
It's not that... Nobody cares, because you also come from a very judgmental family.
That's true.
Right.
That's true.
And they do voice their opinion a lot on things that
really
shouldn't matter, but they do have strong opinions about things. So as much as, yes, like most people don't care, there are also people that care and are very vocal about it.
Yeah. My dad wasn't, but my mom was.
Given that, how come you're not... stuck in, you know what I mean, feeling that worry all the time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think part of it is my dad in me, because he was very kind. And I think for a long time I was pretty rigid and pretty judgmental. And then it just got to be too hard.
It is.
A lot of work looking after the world.
Yeah,
and then it's like, and then you realize, you step back, it's hard to step back, but you step back and you realize that nobody cares if I'm doing that or not.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter.
And it doesn't matter.
Most things don't matter that much.
Exactly.
Surprise.
And so then you can start to enjoy life and just laugh. And, and just, I don't know, like people. Rather than judge them first.
When would you say you got to that stage, if there's...
I think I started to come to that stage right near our end of being at the college.
Before
we moved to Caringport, I think.
But because how? In that environment, I just don't understand.
Yeah,
Because she's incredible. And so, honestly, like, the smartest person
human.
We know, probably.
The most beautiful, the funniest.
Keep it.
But honestly,
Like, as a woman in that environment, you were also completely isolated uh-huh. from the outside. It's not like you were getting outside uh-huh. influence. There was no internet.
Uh-huh. That, like, you had, true. That's true. Which helped me later on.
You had, like, local TV uh-huh. and yeah. the library. Uh-huh. And yeah. that was it. So it is incredible.
Those so Agatha Christie novels.
It's horrible, Agatha Christie novels.
Yeah, no, it is. Because I think, like, I don't think the church really perpetuates that kind of thing. I think it's more like the judgmental thing, mm-hmm. and the more you are in other people's business and, like, making
Christian
judgments.
You are.
Yeah. So I yeah, think, really. Like, how do you... Mm-hmm. How do you step outside of that when you're in the middle of it?
I feel like if there is evidence for... the Holy Spirit, or, you know, like a greater being that you can connect with that yeah. will make your life better. That is it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you're a unicorn.
Yeah. Well, when we went to Moose Jaw and started pastoring this church, it was a very hurting church. And I was able to connect with a lot of people. And
sorry, I'll let you finish.
I was just going to say two previous pastors' wives have been very, very standoffish and very too spiritual for anything. And I wasn't spiritual for anything. So, and it just by being that way, it brought healing mm-hmm. to a lot of the people in the church.
Because that's the only part I remember when we had that, like, goodbye ceremony mm-hmm. at Moose Jaw. All I remember is people coming up and saying how lovely you were.
Yeah.
I don't remember much about else, but, like... The thing that was kept coming up was like, Lynn, you were just so real. People loved it. I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about.
I don't actually.
I have to live with her.
I don't remember that ceremony at all.
It was a supper.
A supper. Okay.
Potluck?
I remember that.
But we were in the main sanctuary.
Yeah, we were in the main.
I remember something that might be that. I can't say with certainty.
It's okay.
I don't remember much about it. That's the only thing I remember. It's like, okay, yeah, we get it. Mom's great.
I wonder if I journaled about it.
Because that might have been when Dad resigned, and then a bunch of people went up and said stuff too.
Oh yeah, maybe
the Sunday he resigned, and then they had a farewell supper.
Oh,
but later.
Yeah,
so
I think
it
was that Sunday.
See, things like,
but
I mean,
at that church, sorry, before mm-hmm. while we're talking about the resignation, the elders there accused him of being manipulative mm-hmm. when he was emotional. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. Ah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And insightful, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you going to say?
Oh, just for example, this has, like, what I did was there was a woman in our church that I knew was really going through a tough time. So I went to her house. Her daughter was there, who I'd never met before. And I just said, is she here? Is your mom here? And she said, no, she's having a sleep. Did you want to come in? I'm like, well, would that be okay? So when she woke up, I was there. And that she mentioned that. It's like, I woke up and my pastor's wife was in my house. I had,
how
you know.
Creepy.
Yeah. So
I was a stalker.
And I got
I
to know
that.
Her daughter
waking,
a little
waking
bit.
Up from a nap. And
I know.
But she loved it.
Oh, no.
So that's great.
What's not to like?
Unless it's them, right?
But
it's an angel.
But just things like that you do that you don't really think about, but it impacts people.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it might have been a bad impact, but she liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got lucky with that one.
I did get lucky with that one.
I mean, there's also an age difference, too. Like, our generation doesn't like...
People just dropping in.
Although I kind of like people dropping in. Oh, yeah. But, you know, probably not if I'm napping.
Well, and we just waited till she was done. Like, we didn't wake her up or anything, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was... And we had a really nice time. I got to pray with her. And
was she sick? Like, was
no
she
marriage
going...
problems.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, men. Am I right?
You are. I mean, you would know. You date them.
Yeah, it's funny. It's... I mean, not to make this all about me and my dating life.
Yes, actually,
how great it is.
We want a whole episode about that.
Yeah, we do.
I'm about to say, you know, I get a lot of insight having, like, when I first started dating Lynn, I was like, this is what women are talking about. I get it. I think everyone should date their same gender, because I think then women would also, like, well, yeah. I think women in general are probably better than men. But they might learn a couple things that men are like, oh, this is what they're talking about. So, yeah, men.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say that we have head listener feedback that wants to know more about your story. So.
Oh, really? No,
yeah. How
about? it's just flattering.
She's making stuff. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. No, I'm not making
no,
stuff.
No, she's not. She told someone me someone that I have direct real, contact actual with. Name.
A single name.
Yeah, but we only have, like, 8 Patreon listeners, so.
No, we're up to, like, 14.
Oh, yeah, we're doing
well, you know, I'll call that back by popular demand.
It is, yeah.
It is.
Significant percentage.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah, so
I love how engaged your listeners are.
Have you on and talk mm-hmm. about that, you know, I mean, growing up as a PK, mm-hmm. and.
I'd like to hear it.
Would you?
Yeah.
We can talk about it later tonight, too.
Yeah.
I've been on lots of dates now. I've learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, you're on Tinder now, so.
I haven't been on Tinder in a couple of years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that was, oof, what a wild ride.
I mean, that's like the dating app.
Well, not now.
Dating and hooking up.
Let's move to Hinge.
Oh, wow, I'm so out of the loop.
Yeah, you guys
have no idea.
Yeah, what's Hinge? Isn't
it's like. It's like,
it's like Tinder.
It's like Tinder, but it uses like machine learning algorithms to like prioritize your people you see.
Oh,
based
yeah.
on who they think you'll like.
Gotcha. Is that what you use now?
We don't need to talk about this on our recording right now.
Okay, that's fair.
Anyway, so how do you feel now in your life right now? It seems like you've come a long way. And you've made a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm. When I... Probably the best time was from June last year to probably June this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you went to Vancouver.
I went to Vancouver, saw my son. I wasn't with my husband. I didn't have that stress, although it was still kind of stressful. But
you weren't,
just being around my grandchildren, my children, my own space, my own job, and then finding out that about the cancer, then it's like, ugh, this is so inconvenient.
You're finally living the life you wanted.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you wanted.
Yeah.
You wanted to be close to your grandkids mm-hmm. and involved, mm-hmm. and you were living that, and then it's like, you may only have a year to live.
Mm-hmm. So then it's, okay, what do I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Candace was the first one to pick up on that. I thought I had tons of time. Mm. She said, okay, what do you want to do, Mom, with your life? I'm like,
yeah,
I've got time.
Yeah, I have two thoughts on that. Mm-hmm. One is, I don't think I really realize maybe how, is miserable too strong of a word to use?
No.
You were?
Maybe not strong enough.
Maybe not strong enough. I don't know. Until I saw you the last year or two.
Oh, really?
And you were just so happy, and it was mm-hmm. it was. It's been so nice to see.
Thank you.
It's just really, I don't know, like validating a triumph of humanity. I don't know how to say it, but it's just really nice to see you happy because I don't deserve to be happy, and I think a lot of people aren't happy, mm-hmm. and I think you've just come such a long ways, mm-hmm. and like. It's just, when I think about you now, I smile a lot.
Oh, good.
So I think that's great. And then I have a friend whose belief is, like, he believes in reincarnation. So we're always talking about his past lives and everything.
That's fun. I would like to talk to him because I'm interested in this.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You guys, he's already Mom's biggest fan, everything I told him
about. Yeah.
He's like, your mom is amazing.
True, yeah.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, his thing is, like, we're here to learn a lesson. Mm-hmm. And, like, maybe you've learned your lesson.
So it's time to go?
No.
I don't want to go yet.
No, but, like, mm-hmm. but maybe that's it. You learn joy, happiness, mm-hmm. freedom, things like that.
Yep.
which I think is really nice. Like, for, I don't know, it's, for me, it's a very...
It's a hopeful.
It's very inspiring, I think, to see how much you've changed and, like, how life can be so different and good and...
And I feel like your story is an inspiration for women stuck in these relationships. Yeah. Like, you were there for 40 years.
Over 40 years.
And a lot of... There's a lot of... That's a big sunk cost fallacy to fight.
Yeah.
Like, I've given this 40 years...
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It can't have been worth nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to be able to go from that to, like, actually moving out and actually separate, saying, I don't want you to be a part of this, that is so huge and brave.
And so freeing. Mm-hmm. So freeing.
But it was so scary.
It was so scary.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honestly, if I wouldn't have had you guys in my corner, I wouldn't be here where I'm at.
And you had us in your corner because you were in our corner. Mm. Yeah. You reap what you sow, you know?
Mm-hmm. that's good.
I mean, that's good. Dad is reaping what he sowed.
I know I left.
But believes he's being tortured by the devil. Like... That's a great tragedy. Yeah,
me.
You know, Lucifer was an angel.
Yes.
He is both.
Yes. Yes. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. Reaping what, if so, that's,
Except the cancer. Although, you may have planned, you know, like wishing to die.
You know.
That can't be good for your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For so
and it's
long.
So, and I
other
feel
people
like
wishing you to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. I mean, I feel like that story resonates with so many women in Christian complementarian relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, but you kind of had the worst of it because you had this like complementarian, like you need to do all the work at home and raise the children, and you have to support us financially because he refused to do that and quit the job that.
Yeah.
Actually, like, supported the family.
Or get a job when he was a student.
Yeah.
So part of me thinks, really, if I'd have seen ahead, I would have just said, you're going to have to get a job.
Yeah.
I'm busy.
Yeah, and you were.
And I was.
Yeah. Of the two of you, you were more busy.
Mm-hmm. 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 I remember we had somebody come, missionaries or something, they came for dinner. And I was just telling her somewhat that I was so tired and explaining my life. And she said, well, you're not just burning the candle at both ends. You're burning it in the middle, too.
Yeah. And you did that for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I just got worn out. I did. I just got worn out. So thank you for letting me share this.
Anytime. Anything else you want to share at any point, we can pull out the recorder.
Thanks for
we want it all. We do.
My
support
team. I love this.
We love you.
Mm-hmm. I love you.
And I think we all felt that growing up, right?
Yes.
I mean, I was oblivious to most of
totally.
Of this, which is maybe good for kid to be. But I always felt a lot of love from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad. Because I don't know that I was always very loving.
No, I was thinking the other day about some of my favorite things with you. Like, sometimes if you... Maybe just you and us at home and be like, you'd be like, hey, Johnny, do you want to, like, make popcorn and watch a movie? Like, it was something so scandalous and, like, taboo.
So
and I'm like,
sweet.
Yes, I want to do that. And it's just like... Sorry if you're going through like out grocery shopping, like, oh, should we buy some of these cookies?
Yes, I do remember that.
You know what I mean? Like, I kind of like
that is
and
like,
her voice would get quiet and be like, I'm with this.
Sneak in this.
It's like our little secret that's fun. I love that as a kid.
I think that's also why usually, like, when we came to visit you. And you're like, oh, do you want to come to the I have to run to the grocery store. I was always like, because it was always fun and like.
I'm glad.
And that is something that I try to cultivate with my kids. And I didn't even realize it till you said it that I got that from you.
Oh, that's funny.
That is
nice.
Direct transplant.
Yeah. I know. Because you came home from grocery shopping with Ren.
Yeah.
The other day, and she had gotten to choose something. It was so cute. She was so happy.
Yeah. That's sweet. Atia never got into it. No. Although now that she's older, she's...
Remember one time you put Nutella on the list, and I came home with Nutella, and I remember you're, oh, it works!
I'm so excited.
I'm gonna put stuff on the list.
I can't believe it. It was like Christmas. So I've never had Nutella before. I'd only ever like had it at a friend's house or something.
Was it name brand Nutella?
Yeah. I don't remember. I don't think they had any brand yet.
Hazelnut brand.
Yeah,
mine
don't.
I remember having the
Nutella. Oh, maybe.
I think it was the no-name stuff.
Yeah, it could have been. Because it's still, like $1 cheaper.
Yeah.
And whatever. Any count.
I still had it on toast the same for like forever after that. It worked.
One teaspoon at a time.
Yeah. Every now and then I just take a spoonful.
Yeah. I'm glad you had
forgot about that.
Good memories from Those growing memories. Up with me.
Yeah.
Thank
one
you.
One bad memory that comes to mind.
Yeah.
When you were making ice cream.
What happened?
People remember this. That's good. It was the most terrified I've ever been.
Were you terrified? I remember that, and I only like whenever I think of it, I just laugh.
Really? I get cringe inside, and like push the memory away.
What happened? So where were we living?
We're in Carrot.
Somebody set the scene for me,
and
in the trailer,
we got right.
Somebody had lent us
Grandpa and Grandma.
Grandpa and Grandma lent us their ice cream maker, and so. I was making ice cream, and it wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. I'm like, oh, what's going on? I guess I was pretty traumatic.
It was doing what it was supposed to be doing, but she didn't realize that. And she thought the outside was supposed to be moving or something, but it was moving on the inside. It was one where you put the ice cream in the middle, and then you put ice around the outside. So she was, like, putting ice and, like... She would put so much salt on to melt it so that it would move or something, and it wasn't.
It froze like it really fast.
She was attacking it with a knife and yelling at it and like, ah, why won't you?
Man.
And I had like was in my room on my bed just like quaking.
Oh, I'm so sorry, John.
I'd never seen you so angry before.
It wasn't about the ice cream.
It was an outlet.
Were there other things going on at the time?
Oh, probably. Yes. I'm sure there were.
But it's so typical, you know, that something that's supposed to be fun and like magical.
I'm like terrified to eat this ice cream. I'm like, thank you, Mom.
I remember that, but it didn't traumatize. I remember you were mad, but I didn't feel like it was directed toward us.
Come on in.
That's okay. We are recording.
Are we done?
Yeah, we can. I have a question.
Yep.
That we didn't get to before that Candace started asking you.
Okay.
You talked about your journey working through John stuff. What about me moving in with my boyfriend?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That again, I had already been listening to some stuff and reading. It wasn't so much that I felt like God specifically spoke to me, but I had, by then, found Stephanie Drury. And from that, you find a whole bunch more people who've had issues with the church and their stories. And I started reading lots and lots of that kind of thing and realized that saving yourself for marriage isn't that big a deal. Like, if you can, fine. But if not, it's not, you're not going to go to hell. It's not, I don't believe in God's book. It's that big a deal. So then, when you,
eased you into it.
Eased me into it, which I was very thankful still for that, to like, what if?
What if I just spent the night at his place?
You were very gracious to me, you were. And I
It was for
that.
My own protection as well.
So by then it wasn't that big a deal for me. But then again, for your dad it was.
Yes.
Huge, huge table. And he responded so maturely.
Yeah.
Make good choices. Oh, you can't.
Oh, I'd say make good choices, but I don't think you have been.
Yeah, when I was leaving.
It was very... I had a question for you about that, too, because I think we were talking about, like, Dad making things about him, and definitely our conversation ended up all being about him, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to support you with this, I don't agree with this, you can't do this in my house, all these things. Was it the same with you?
Very much. Yeah. It was very... I don't even remember anymore. I've, like, blocked so much of it out. Yeah. But he did say, well, I can no longer bless your future marriage. I can't... I won't walk you down the aisle. I won't pay a blessing over your wedding. And then he was telling people that he... or he told you, I think, that he viewed my boyfriend as if he had killed me. Like, he viewed him as a murderer because we were moving in together. Like, it was so dramatic.
Melodramatic.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. But so, also that tactic, about him. That tactic is so manipulative.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, if you want my love, you have to perform exactly the way I tell you to in this world.
Yep.
Otherwise, you are not deserving of my love. It's very abusive.
Yeah,
it is. And same to you.
And not just that you're not worthy of it, it's that you're hurting me at the same time.
Yeah. It hurts my heart.
Yeah.
I did tell him, because he tends to be a verbal processor.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I understand that this is a lot for you to deal with, but I ask that you don't process it at me. And that was the last time we talked, pretty much.
Well, then he went and processed it at...
I know.
You.
I'm sorry.
Like, he did it all the time with everything.
Yeah.
Because he can't process stuff himself. Yeah.
So, then I just moved out.
Yeah.
And when you moved out, we had conversations about how we felt like he was holding you hostage. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because of the way anytime anyone said something to him that he didn't like, how he just berated you.
Mm-hmm.
So he had just, you know, like, another way of him insulating himself from ever having to have a real relationship with anyone, you know, because these are all, like, invitations to a real relationship.
Totally.
Like, look, I am being vulnerable with you. This is me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, I reject you.
Mm-hmm.
Who you are hurts me. Mm-hmm. And then he would go and take it out on you.
Mm-hmm. And I do know he blames me. Because if I would have been... Okay, this is... If I would have been phony like him... All our kids would be going to church still, right?
No, we would all be way more fucked up.
And that's honestly,
that's what I think too.
We'd be going to church. Yeah. Enough said.
Messed up big time. But he does blame me for the.
He told you that
situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that's so. Yeah. Crazy.
But see,
but also amazing, like, fascinating. It's just like, how can you, like...
But I think this, and we talked about this before, to me, you guys living the way you're living validates my parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you are able to think outside the box you grew up in. And that's what I always wanted, was for you to be able to think beyond... what I was able to give you, what we were able to give you, and make different choices. Don't be sucked in by the church and all the crap that goes on, and just make good choices.
Some of us haven't, clearly.
That's what I've been told, anyway.
I know I shouldn't have got married, and we should have just lived together, okay? I regret it.
Oh, finally she says it.
get separated so you can live in sin.
Yeah. Actually, Stephen has offered. Yeah. He's like, if you want, we can get a divorce and live in sin. I'm like, oh, so much work. But I love that you offered that.
Yeah. It's very sweet.
You have a good man.
I know.
You have a very good man.
Yeah. Should we wrap up?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Should we wrap it?
For giving me this.
Well, I think we should do this again if you think of anything else you want to share.
I think I did everything. I think it's everything I wanted to say. But if something else comes, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
I can't stop thinking about that ice cream.
He's going to have nightmares about it.
I will.
Wake up in a cold sweat.
Ice cream, no. Not ice cream.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, until next time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This has been Cancer Talks with Mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should have more of these.
I think we should. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Like Tuesdays with Maury.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that one really sad?
Yeah, the guy's dying. It's like conversations with him.
Oh.
He's dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Kind of fits.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay.